Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, September 20th. I'm Ray Graff. Today, we'll help you solve your computer and technology issues, whether you're having maybe a little problem with a firewall or connecting to the internet. We have our resident expert ready to help you troubleshoot. Tony Yang is the operator of Albany-based Gig Computers. If you have a computer or tech question, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551 or email voxpop@wamc.org. Number again, though, is 800-348-2551. Tony Yang, your computer questions coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Here to answer your computer and technology questions today is Tony Yang. Tony began Gig Computers in 1996 while studying computer science at SUNY Albany. It started out as a hobby in college, quickly blossomed into one of the largest PC retailers in the region. Tony manages many networks in the region for companies and organizations, including this one. If you have a question about tech and computing, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. Again, the number, though, is 800-348-2551. Tony Yang, welcome back. How are you?
Hey, Ray. Great to be back.
It really is great to have you here because I've been petrified for about a month now. All of a sudden, there was an urgent update to the iPhones, and then there was a little bit in the news about something major that happened. It was all very confusing to me, but it gave me reason to be nervous.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those unusual situations. We don't hear about potential security leaks on Apple products, but people, listeners, you know, should be aware of that. Apple is a Linux-based operating system, so it is hackable, just like Windows. Although it's got better security layers than Windows, it is still vulnerable.
Now, I've never quite understood, why does it have better security layers than PCs?
So the Linux, from the beginning, has been built with security in mind.
Yeah.
Windows, on the other hand, was this just complete porous operating system out there. They have, since Windows NT 4.0 days, they started mimicking and implementing some of the Linux.
How long ago was that?
Oh, my God. It's 20 years. I feel old, but just by talking about it. So Linux has always been security conscious, and it's always done a better job, which is why Apples are less hackable, but it is still hackable.
Is Linux open source?
It is, depending on which variety you're talking about. So Sun Microsystems, the largest Linux computing company in the world, their operating system is proprietary. You got to pay for licenses, which are really, really expensive.
Yeah.
But that's what all these huge mainframes run on. And then you get the Linux variety. Linux is Unix. But it's a freely distributed OS out there. So you have Red Hat, you know, Debian, CentOS, all kinds of different varieties out there. They're all free.
Okay. Now, I'm not fully familiar with why we would have open source. I guess because it encourages innovation. But does it not also throw the code out there for people who would do harm?
It does, right? It's a double-edged sword. Computing, in the beginning, was meant to be a scientific research collaboration tool.
Yeah,
that's why it was open source. It was always meant to be out there so that scientists can communicate with each other through a common code, and you can write programs, form, and share that freely to the world. Nowadays, companies are profiting from it. That's why it became proprietary.
Okay. Well, it's all about money. It always is. Tony Yang is our guest today. It's Computers on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number, and the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And before we hit the phones, Tony, let's tackle a couple of emails. This one's from Mike in Rexford. I often get pop-ups on web pages asking permission for the site to use cookies. I don't know what to do. Should I click the accept button? Is it dangerous? And that's from Mike in Rexford.
That's a good question. The reason most browsers will have these pop-ups is because you have disabled the automatic acceptance of cookies.
Yeah.
So people, you know, I do that on my on my computer. I turn it off so that no cookies get installed automatically.
Yeah.
I will get a pop-up to a new site that I've never been to. Once you've been to it and you accept it, it stores it on your computer. But if you haven't, you have to click on yes. Otherwise, there are functions that won't work properly. So the answer to that question is it safe? It depends on the website. If you go on to Yahoo or, you know, MSN, all these known sites, then you should be fine. But if you're on a website that you've never been to, you've never heard of, probably not a good idea. Click no, do some research, and then click yes if you find out that it's safe.
I mean, you can always get rid of the cookies, though, right?
You can always get rid of the cookies. Problem is, sometimes the site is really, really malicious.
Yeah.
By the time you found out, it's late.
All right. Tony Yang is our guest, and I never feel quite relaxed after these shows because there's always so much to worry about. This one is from Edward. Does OneDrive, Carbonite, others protect against ransomware attacks? If not, how can one back up to defend against them?
Another good question. OneDrive and other services like Carbonite do provide protection against malware. So that is only in terms of your stored files that are at their site. It doesn't protect what's also stored on your computer if you have other things installed on your computer. So just because you have OneDrive doesn't mean that your entire computer gets protection.
All right. Now, those of us who have Carbonite, it will back up automatically all the time.
Right.
And I guess, you know, if you get a ransomware attack, you can always buy a new computer and then download everything that you had on Carbonite.
Which is why we always tell people to back up.
Yeah.
These online backup services are excellent for that purpose. In case you do get an attack, wipe out the operating system, get it reinstalled, and download all your files, and we store everything under your computer. So it's a good service to have, and I will encourage people to use it.
Tony Yang's our guest today. It's computers, 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll do a couple of more emails here as the phone lines load up. This is from Marty in Hadley, who wants to know how Marty can permanently delete songs from the library on a MacBook Pro. Can't seem to permanently get rid of songs. When I hit delete the song, it asks if I want to hide the song. That's the only option. Can you help?
Yeah, that's, you know, Ray, that sounds kind of strange because usually, so there are two ways to deal with songs on a Mac platform. You either use iTunes.
Yep.
Or you can just drag files and put it in a folder and play it with a audio software.
Yeah.
Either way, if you delete a song, it should be asking you to put that into a recycle bin. And then to permanently delete that, you go into the recycle bin and just clear it. That's the end of that process.
Yeah.
So it sounds like something else going on that user's laptop.
I would suspect that perhaps Marty has all the songs in the cloud at iTunes or whatever, and you could take them out of your library, but they're still going to be there.
Yeah, so the best thing to do is to really use iTunes. That's the way that MacBooks are designed, Apple products are designed when it comes to songs. You have to use iTunes and use that interface to manage all of your songs.
Okay, let's do one more, maybe two emails, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the phones. Tony Yang joins us today, and this email is from... It's taking a long time to load. You know, this network here at WAMC, Tony, it's really bugging me. No, I'm kidding. All right. I can't download them. All right. Let's go to the phones and Larry in Saugerties. Larry, you're on.
Hi there. This is Larry. I've got a PC that I'm running XP on because I need it to operate a machine. And I'm attempting to download a printer driver for an HP Envy printer. And I keep on getting stuck, and it just won't, I can't find the driver once I download it. And it stops in the middle and says I need to put in a program. Let me think of what the name of it is. It's some sort of a file program, 3.5, framework. And, It says I've got 1.5 gigabytes on the hard drive in certain files, but when I go search them, I can't find that that information. It's like hidden. Where is it?
Hey, Larry. Windows XP, boy. That was a good operating system.
I loved it. Operating system, but a good operating system.
So I'm not surprised that you're running into problems installing drivers for XP. First of all, they don't make it easily accessible. It sounds to me like your HP Envy driver requires the Windows, what we call the Windows Framework 3.5. Lots and lots of different drivers out there depend on that framework to run. So the 3.5, usually you can have the driver automatically install that for you. If that's not working, you can go to the Microsoft website and directly download the file for Framework 3.5, install that first, and then attempt to install your driver again. That seems to work pretty well. I would also suggest that you uninstall whatever you have installed so far so that it's a clean start.
All right, Larry, we got to take a break here. It's Computers Today with Tony Yang. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. It's Computers Today. Tony Yang's our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Paul is in Greenwich. I assume you're in Greenwich, New York, and not Greenwich, Connecticut.
That's right. Greenwich, New York is right.
All right, go ahead.
We have an older laptop. It's about 10 years old and running Windows 10. And we have a number of documents in Microsoft Word. This weekend, I went to open one of those documents, and it wouldn't open Microsoft Word. It just got a panel that said, sorry, we couldn't open this program. Go to the control panel to resolve this issue or to fix this issue. And then I went to the control panel, and we couldn't figure out from the control panel what we were supposed to do next.
Okay.
So sometimes, Paul, the Windows loses what we call filed extension association.
Why?
Okay.
Why does it do that?
Good question. Lots of different reasons.
Okay.
Sometimes I know this sounds weird, but it just seems to happen if a PC gets much older. It's one of those things that I can't explain scientifically.
Nice.
But the issue here is that the extension on the file is not recognized by Windows, so it doesn't know what to do to open up the file. The file association is part of the Windows control panel. There's a icon on there that says programs, and that's where you would go, default programs. That's where you would go to reassociate that. Now, if you're having no luck doing that, the other way around is to reinstall Microsoft Word or Office if you're running Office, which includes Word.
Typically, we're not running Office.
Yep. So if you just have Word, that's fine too. If you just reinstall Microsoft Word, it will automatically reestablish that file link for you and resolve that issue.
Okay. Well, we'll see if we can figure out how to do that, and hopefully we'll get into our files. We're able to actually email the file to my email account and open it on my phone.
Yeah.
Yep. Really weird.
All right.
So, okay. So at least we can get into the files that way. But if so, I should try and reinstall Word.
Yeah, if you just reinstall Word, like I said, typically it would reassociate that file extension for you.
Would you do a full reinstall in that case, or would you just try to fix it?
It's almost always better to uninstall it and then reinstall it.
But will you lose any of those files that you have already made in Word, or are they separately held?
Good question. It will not delete the Word documents.
Okay.
It will erase some of the maybe customized Word settings within the program itself,
right. Yep.
That you have to reconfigure after. But you won't lose any of the documents themselves.
All right, Paul.
Okay, I think that's what I need to know.
Okay.
Listen, thank you for your help.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks, Paul.
It's Computers Today on Vox Pop. Tony Yang joins us from Gig Computers. 800-348-2551 is the number. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Julie writes in from Massachusetts, cloud computing is expanding exponentially. Can you comment on system performance observations based on a cloud solution? What are the additional security issues, if any? Great questions, Julie.
Excellent question. And there is, boy, I mean, there's a whole broad range of cloud computing out there.
Yeah. Right?
Cloud computing isn't just one thing. It basically incorporates everything that happens on the web.
Yeah.
Typically, when people think about cloud computing, they're thinking a remote, you know, like Microsoft Office, where you can open it up in a web browser, do your word processing or your Excel spreadsheet without actually loading up the program on a laptop or a desktop.
Yeah,
that type of remote computing is actually very, very secure. So if you're on Microsoft Azure, as an example, and you're using their cloud computing platform, that is fantastic way of securing your computing, right? Because nothing is happening on your desktop, so your desktop can be completely compromised by some malware on there. It will have no effect on the Microsoft platform because that's all happening on their server.
Uh-huh.
And believe me, they spend many millions, probably many billions, securing their system because there are hundreds of probably millions of users using it on a daily basis. And there has been no major hacks on their platform. So if you're talking about Microsoft cloud computing, it's very secure. AWS, Amazon's web services, very, very secure.
Interesting.
So it depends on who you go to. If you go to a mom and pop place, it's probably not as secure, even though it is still considered to be cloud computing.
Yeah.
It's not quite as secure as Microsoft or Amazon platform.
All right. This one is from Rachel. Could Tony please talk about how Googling information has seemed to be getting less and less valuable due to so many ads? For example, search for water wheel, and instead of history and technology and cultural information, one gets a ton of results trying to sell you water wheels. And that's from Rachel. Well, how are you going to solve that one, Tony?
I'm going to give I'll give Google a call and tell them to stop putting so many ads on.
Oh, you can find a number, Ken. Yeah, well, you win. Right. Yeah, that's good for you.
Yep, no phone numbers, just the email address.
Right.
You know, that's a tough thing because these companies, they make money based on advertisement, right? Whatever pops up on the screen is how they charge their clients.
Mm-hmm.
There are some browser-based companies that has less ad. I won't say they're ad-free, but they have less ad than Google. But if you're going to be using Google, there's no way around it. This is how they survive and how they make their billions.
Okay, and then Ethan in Truckee, California, one of our regular correspondents from the West Coast, says, how does DuckDuckGo work?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I've never tried it. I love the name, but I've never tried it.
I got nothing for you there.
Okay.
You know, I was thinking, Ray, that on the last question, there are these ad pop-up blockers that you can use.
Yeah.
So for Rachel, you could try an ad blocker. The only thing to be aware of is these blockers will block legitimate content from coming
up as well.
Absolutely. So then there's the frustration of going, why is this not working? Well, it's not working because you're trying to prevent something that's supposed to come to your computer, and it's messing up other things.
Right. When you get a PayPal pop-up where you put your to finish the sale and it doesn't appear, and you say, well, what happened here?
Yeah. We don't typically recommend it for that reason.
Okay. This is from Joseph, and then we'll go back to the phones. I have about five different computer devices in my home office, ranging from laptops to PCs and a tablet, all running Windows 10, same virus protection software. What is the best, simplest way I can network them all so that I don't have to keep using flash drives and SD cards to transfer my files back and forth? I've asked a few computer friends. None of them laid claim to having this knowledge, and that's Joe in LaGrangeville.
Oh, you're playing in my sandbox now.
Oh, boy.
So networking, basic networking for just workstations, pretty easy. You do have to have a Microsoft professional version of the software, not the home edition. Mm-hmm. The home edition has very, very limited functions.
Yep.
So you do have to pay a little extra to get the pro version of the OS.
Yeah.
The pro version of the OS will allow you to enable Microsoft networking, which is a very, very basic network connectivity built into every Microsoft professional operating system that allows you to share your drives, share printers, so that you don't have to use flash drives anymore after that. The network speed will be as fast as whatever network, wireless network you're running.
All right, let's go back to our phone lines with Tony Yang. 800-348-2551 is the number. Patty in Clifton Park. Patty, you're on. Hello, Patty. Yeah. Yes, the phones seem to be a little wonky the last couple of days. Patty, are you there? Going once, going twice. Hello.
Yes, yes. Hello.
Oh, you win the big prize.
Hello.
You're on with Tony Yang. Go
hey,
ahead.
Hey, Patty.
Hi, so sorry. Three really quick questions. One, my husband and I both have Android phones, and it seems to just change our settings willy-nilly. My son says we're crazy. Are we? Two, external hard drive, or should I use one of the ones that you were talking about at the beginning of the show? And three, there's this redecorating app game that I want to play, decorating, but when I go to it, it tells me pretty much I have to give up all of my rights. They're going to sell my information and data and et cetera, et cetera. Am I opening myself up to all kinds of craziness?
Yeah, three good questions.
Yeah.
Android phones resetting preferences, they normally happen when there's a software upgrade. So it can change some things because they're trying to make it more secure. That may be what's happening. A lot of the updates gets done in the background silently. So you don't even know that it's happening. You know, it happens at 3 or 4 in the morning while you're sleeping. Next morning you wake up, something is just a little different. That's because the software has gone through an upgrade. So that has been my kind of typical experience with things getting changed when you just let the phone sit there, because there is a lot of stuff going on in the back end. So I'm guessing maybe that's
what's
happening.
Crazy. I can tell my son that the professional said it happens and it's not, we're not doing something.
Yeah, no.
I mean, in fairness, he really didn't say you weren't crazy, but you seem to be right on this one, Patty.
All right.
On the external drive, I would recommend using both. Use the online services. So, you know, you can hook up with a service like Dropbox or Box.net or Carbonite. Their personal accounts are usually free. So you can store up to like a gig or maybe many gigs of data for free. So use that and then pay a little extra to store 10, 20 or unlimited amount of data. And then back it up to your external hard drive. I would do both and not just depend on one. There's no such thing as backing up too many times. You're never going to regret that.
Okay.
And I have here regrets on the other side of the spectrum a lot.
Okay.
The redecorating app, that goes back to the Googling question, right?
Right.
When you use Google, it comes with ads, and that's how they make money.
Yep.
When it comes to ads, especially ads that are free out there, they give you free application in exchange for your privacy data. And that's the way it works.
Yeah.
So when you install it, yes, if you read through all those pages and pages of notes, a lot of it is about privacy.
Yeah.
And it's about collecting information on your computer. So
no
way to get around it, unfortunately.
So it sounds like a bad idea to me.
Yeah.
Get a commercial pay software. Usually that's better.
All right, Patty, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go over to, I believe, Larry in Norfolk, Connecticut. Larry, you're on.
Hi, Tony. How are you? And Bray, hello.
Hello. Hello, Larry.
So I have both an iPhone and a MacBook Pro. And about a week ago or so, I lost emails, all of my emails, for a certain period. It was a little longer on the phone. It was about a year and a half of emails disappeared. And on the laptop, I lost all my emails that were in the inbox from July of 2021 till the beginning of September. All the emails before that are still in there, and I've continued to receive emails flawlessly since then. But I have no idea what happened and what I can do to restore those.
So that's an interesting question. Well, you only lost 2 months of emails.
No, no. About 15 months on my laptop and longer on my phone, actually.
Okay. All right. That makes more sense, actually. So it almost sounds like your email got archived.
Got what?
It got archived, and that's a thing that we do with large email mailboxes on any network, because once you grow beyond a certain size, it gets dangerously large, and it could crash. It could have damaged data in
but,
it.
In both cases, I didn't lose the emails before the dates that I started losing them are still there.
Yeah, and that's the strange part. I think that the probably the simplest explanation for that is that period of time where your emails are missing are probably archived. They're archived in a file somewhere, either on your iPhone or on the MacBook Pro, because they're synced together. Mm. So I will look to see if it's been archived. That's number one. And then I will look to see if they're in. Have you checked inside your deleted box and see if there's any emails in there that matches those dates?
Oh, yes, I went to every folder.
Oh, okay. Boy. So I will look for a file that resembles an archive file and see if that exists on either your iPhone or the MacBook Pro. I will probably start with the phone first before you start with the Mac Pro.
Why?
Because on the phone, on the computer, it's a little more involved to actually do the archiving process.
Right.
You'll be clicking through things. On the iPhone, it could be in your pocket. And if your hands are in your pocket sometimes, you know, people pocket dial.
Yep.
Same kind of stuff happens with a program. You could be clicking on things and not even know that it happened. And then when you go back to it, you go, it did something on its own. Well, no, it's because something else caused it to happen.
Yes, I've had that problem losing apps in my pocket. Where did all the apps go?
It happens.
Yeah.
So I just looked in my archive file on my phone, and there's nothing there.
There's nothing there. What email service do you use, Larry?
Apple.
Use Apple.
Me.
Okay. Me.
So it's me.com.
You might want to log on to the Apple online.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Email.
Yeah.
Service instead of your iPhone or your MacBook, because the online version may just have that there.
You'll see it all, maybe. Yeah.
And even if it's deleted, it will be in the deleted box on the online version. It's almost like the Apple Cloud service.
Yeah.
The same type of backup is afforded to users on their email service as well. So I will check there. You might have good luck finding the lost emails on the online version.
All right, Larry, we got to take a break here, but thank you very much for the call. It's Computers Today with Tony Yang. 800-348-2551 is the number. VoxPop at WAMC.org is the email address. And now, the soothing sounds of King Crimson. Vox Pop on WAMC Computers today with Tony Yang of Gig Computers. The number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. David in Queensbury writes, I'm getting a black screen from my older HP PC, probably 12 years old, running Windows 7. The monitor says it's not getting a signal from the PC. I've done the usual stuff. Turned the computer off, back on, unplugged the VGA cable, plugged it back in, switched to an HDMI cable. The monitor works just fine with a different computer. I'd be happy to just retire the old thing, but there are a few files on it that neglected to back up. Any advice? That's from David in Queensbury.
Yeah, sounds like either a failed computer or maybe a dead video card.
Yeah.
The graphics card is the one that displays the graphics on the monitor. So you may simply have a bad graphics card. You have a couple of options. One, replace the video card and see if that works. Hopefully that's it. And if that's not it, and let's say you just got a dead computer, chances are the hard drive that's on the computer is good. So the data's still there. Don't panic, Dave. You got this. So you can simply take that drive. It's internal hard drive, probably 3.5-inch hard drive in there. Take that drive out, plug it onto another computer, and be able to access all the files that were on the old hard drive.
By the way, the hard drives today, compared to even several years ago, one of my kids wanted to get another backup hard drive for PS4 or something. It's like the size of a matchbook almost, and it holds gigabytes and gigabytes of information.
Yep. I mean, compact drives are the size of an SD card.
It's amazing.
And it's got, you know, many, many gigs of storage on it. So, and that's just going to get smaller and smaller. It's all about, right, more and more compact computing. I can't even imagine what we're going to be in 5 to 10 years.
I think we'll be back in the Stone Age in 5 to 10 years. You and I will be standing on rocks and screaming. This email from Shelley in Marlborough, New Hampshire. I'm a college professor. I'll be teaching an online class in the fall. Colleagues keep telling me I need two computer screens. What will two screens do for me that one can't? Will it set up somehow make teaching easier? And that's from Shelley in Marlborough, New Hampshire.
Oh, wow. That's a good question.
I agree.
So, Shelley, I feel guilty saying this now. I have
four
computers, four monitors on my computer.
Why, Tony? Why?
So I typically would have one screen as kind of my reference screen. So if I need to research on a project I'm working on, you know, I'm typing away on one screen. I'm looking at the on a Google web page for some data that I need. So instead of flipping back and forth or splitting the screen, which is hard to see sometimes, I have two full screens where I can reference on one screen and then actually do the actual work on the other screen.
Ah.
And then the screen on the top may just have stock symbols, streaming,
that
type of thing.
Yeah.
Or maybe music going so I can see which songs are playing. I find multi-monitor to be a fantastic thing. So useful. Couldn't live without it. For somebody who's doing
teaching,
online teaching.
I don't even know if it's online. Did she say online? I got to look. Oh, I think I got rid of that email. Sorry, Shelley.
Well, what I'm thinking, you know, you could, if you're doing any type of online teaching or as a student, you're sitting there, perhaps one screen would be the video of the presenter.
Yeah.
Or for the presenter him or herself.
The class.
You'd be able to see the class.
Yeah. Right? And then the other side is what's on the syllabus and what you're teaching.
Exactly.
Okay, so that does make sense.
So two screens will make perfect sense in this scenario. I just feel like you can't have too many screens.
Right.
It's so awesome.
You know what? When are you going to upgrade to 5 screens, Tony?
Yeah, I'm working on it.
All right. let's see. This is from Rory. I'm not totally computer illiterate. I did work with computers at my job, but I recently retired and currently access the net on a tablet only. How secure am I communicating with Social Security on reviewing my bank information? I purchased the tablet originally to download ebooks, but I'm wondering how secure I am in using the tablet for these additional uses.
Good question. Lori, the good news is that most tablets are better secured than desktops.
Why?
Think about the tablets out there. There are basically two versions of tablets. Well, maybe three main versions of tablets out there. There's the Apple tablets,
right?
The iPads, which runs iOS, and then you have Android-based tablets out there, which are the Samsungs out there, and many other brands. IBM even makes one. And then the third one has got some popularity, the Fire tablets from Amazon,
right?
Which is the inexpensive version, but actually is also based on Android.
Mm-hmm.
It's their own proprietary version, but it's really based on Android.
Right.
So you really only have two varieties. It's iOS or Android. Both of those operating systems have not had any major bugs in them. They do an excellent job at protecting the tablets. So when it comes to security on the web, you're doing pretty good. You got a lot more protection and lesser chance of getting hacked than comparing to a desktop or a laptop. So that's the good news.
Yeah.
The bad news is tablets are not as powerful. So if you're trying to do anything more serious than basic browsing, it gets cumbersome.
Yep.
But for basic browsing, it's excellent. It's very secure. As far as your data gets out to the internet when you do banking, most banks, if you're using a banking application or if you're on their website, as long as it's secured and no bank is unsecured, you're pretty safe with typing your data, because all of that is encrypted from end to end. Even somebody in the middle looks at the data, it would make no sense to
all right. All. Okay. What if you are, and we'll get to the phones in a minute here, 800-348-2551. What if you are, let's say you're on the thruway and you're in Eastern Mass and you are stopped at a McDonald's at the rest stop. They have Wi-Fi, which for some reason your phone automatically connects to, which I try to turn off because I hate that. What if then you do banking? Is it still point-to-point, end-to-end, or can somebody access that public Wi-Fi network?
That's an excellent question, and I get asked about that many, many times. So even on an unencrypted network, so if you drive up to Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts, where they provide you with free Wi-Fi,
when
you get on your banking application or you go online to a secure site, that information is still encrypted from end-to-end.
Mm.
So unless you click on a application that the open, unsecured Wi-Fi network is asking you to install, you're secure.
Ah.
So no worries there.
So if you went to a hotel and you went to the hotel Wi-Fi and for some reason you had to do banking or whatever, chances are you're okay. I got to believe somebody in some government office somewhere in a windowless room could easily tap into that.
Somebody in Virginia?
Yeah, you never know where. You never know. All right, let's go back to the phones. And Cindy in West Springfield. Cindy, you're on.
Hi there.
Hi.
I was just wondering what the best way. I have an iMac and I have an external hard drive with a zillion photographs on it. It's a 4 terabyte external hard drive, and it's like half full. What's the best way to back that up? Because I have Time Machine on my Mac, but it doesn't back the external up. Somebody told me something about a carbon copy cloner software. I don't know about that. Or can I just, it'll take forever to do it, right?
Well, Cindy, 2 terabytes of data, it would take a while, but it's doable. That's not a huge, huge amount of data. Depending on your internet connectivity, you could possibly do that maybe in 2-3 hours. You just run the software.
Oh, really?
You just run the software and let it sit there and do its thing, walk away, catch a TV show and come back. It probably be done after that.
Or do it overnight. Right. Is there a particular software I should be using?
There are a variety of different softwares out there that you can use. You have something that you're currently using for online backups?
No, I've never backed up the external. I have Time Machine on my Mac, but which only backs up everything on the computer, but not, it doesn't do the external.
Yeah. Okay. So you can certainly use iTunes and just bring over all the photo onto your iMac and back it up that way. So Time Machine will take care of all of those.
Pardon me?
If you plug in your external drive and import all of your photo over to your iMac, that would allow Time Machine to back up all of your data.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
A minute. It is my external is plugged into my computer, but the people at the computer place told me that it doesn't. The Time Machine doesn't back up your external.
Oh, yes. Cindy, I was saying that you could import all of your photo and data onto your iMac
and then run the web
and then and then
oh,
run
no,
the time
no,
machine.
No, I'm trying to put more on the external.
You're trying to use less of
it.
Yeah.
Down.
So services like
iPhoto is pretty full of photos. Also,
yeah.
Take a look at Dropbox, OneDrive. OneDrive gives you, I think, 1 terabyte
yep.
of free data, and then it's like $10 a month. You know, fairly nominal cost that allows you to do up to like 50 terabytes or something like that. It's an inexpensive way to secure your data.
It's not going to back up what I already have on this external.
It will. OneDrive will back up anything you want.
But it won't do, he said, only 1 terabyte?
The free version is 1 terabyte.
You can always pay and get
you
more.
You can always get more, right? And then you can leverage that with Dropbox and Carbonite. Each one of these guys will give you 1 terabyte. You can kind of spread it out or just pay for the premium service.
All right, Cindy, thanks a lot for the call. This email from, we're having a lot of questions about disk space today. This one's from Julie in Western Mass. I'm trying to upgrade my software on my Apple Mac Mini, but can't because my disk doesn't have enough space. What's the best way to free up space? I know the answer to that.
You do?
Yeah.
All right. What is it, Ray?
Well, it happens on the phone all the time. There'll be an update. You can't get it done. You have to go in, at least for me, you go into your backup, which is in the cloud, and usually it saves several backups, and you just get rid of some of the older backups, and then you have enough room.
That is definitely one way. It's basically clearing the cache of what you already have on there. And then consider moving some of that data onto a external device or onto the cloud so that you can free up more space to do it. There's no magical way of doing of freeing up space. You manually have to go in there and we allocate it elsewhere so that you get more space on your computer. There are some compression programs out there. I don't know if I want to start recommending that.
Okay, why? Why does data compression scare Tony Yang?
Data compression in our past experience have had issues where we lose data that we can't get back. So we try to stay away from it.
That makes sense because it's interpolating the data when you're bringing it back to life.
Right. I mean, there's this software in the back end that's kind of flipping data back and forth, and something happens in between, and now you got corrupted data. So we try to stay away from that. Storage capacity is so inexpensive now. Upgrading to a larger drive will be the way to go.
Are you still all on board with the solid-state drives?
Oh, yeah, completely. But please, back up.
Okay, why? Now, have you seen them fail yet? Now, you've been on this for a couple of years.
Yes.
Have they started to fail?
You rarely will see SSD drive fail within a 5-year time period.
5 years is not enough.
I'm not saying it's going to fail in 5 years. I'm saying I might have seen one drive that failed in all the times that we've been implementing SSD drives. There was one particular brand which I can't mention.
No,
right?
You don't want to.
I'm
do
not
going to
mention it.
We don't want to get sued.
They had a whole batch that went bad on us, so it all failed within a few months. Other than that, all the other brands have been pretty darn good.
I want 50-year guarantee before I make that move. You know. I won't live, but somebody else will live and want to do that.
You know, the mean time between failures on these devices are as good as physical hard drives.
Yeah.
So if you can buy enterprise-level mechanical drive that's been out there for a long, long time, and they'll have a million hours of mean time failures, the SSD drives are just as good.
What about danger of, now, you know, the hard drives, the old hard drives that spin, Tony can do his magic and fix them sometimes when they don't work, or at least get the data off. What about electric shocks, say from lightning or bad ground? Does that affect the data on a solid-state drive?
Lightning does lots of damages to a lot of stuff. So if the actual media is fried, nothing can get that back. And that applies the same way to mechanical drives. If that drive platter inside the hard drive is broken and there's scratches on it, it's very, very difficult to retrieve that. An SSD drive, it's more difficult. It's not impossible anymore, but it depends on the problem. So for the speed that you get out of SSD drives, man, you can't beat it.
All right, listen, if I buy one and it craps out in 3 years, I'm calling Tony Yang.
Back up.
All right, this one looks tough, Tony, but we only have a couple minutes left. This is from Charlie in Worthington. I have a QNAP network attached server, which was compromised by a ransomware group or hacker called Deadbolt. I got a screen telling me they've locked my server and files, telling me to pay them via Bitcoin, a little over $1,000 to get the unlocked code. Turns out it was a known vulnerability. I was able to access the NAS admin panel and update the firmware, which seems to have kicked them out of the server. However, before I could do that, it appears they were going through my folders alphabetically and locking most files with a .deadbolt extension. They only got partway down the list, thankfully. I didn't lose too much. My question, is there any way to unlock those files they did get to without paying the ransom? I have a screenshot of the threat with the Bitcoin key I'm supposed to use, if that helps. I'm not seeing that on my phone, but I think we get the picture.
Yeah. And, you know, these type of incidents are becoming more and more common, whether it's a personal hacking issue or a, you know, enterprise or corporation getting hacked. My default position and as a company, our default position is do not pay the ransom. There's no guarantee that you get that key.
Yeah.
And you could be just, you know, kind of falling deeper into the rabbit hole. So don't pay the ransom. There has been work out there that people have done to unlock. So they decrypt these encryptions that some of the ransomware are using. So you may have luck just Googling, see if there is actually a unencrypted key, decrypt key for that particular version of Deadbolt. You're lucky that it didn't get all the way through the entire drive. They usually just run right through it within minutes. So I would, in this case, I would count your blessings and hopefully you'll be able to find a decrypt key soon. There are many, many organizations working to decrypt all the ransomwares out there. So there's work in progress. You might want to hold on to that data because someday there could be a decrypt key that you can get for free, and that would decrypt everything.
Hey, Tony Yang, we're done, man. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. This was great, and great to be back.
Good to have you on the radio. Support comes from Capital Roots, working to provide healthy food access with dignity for all Capital Region residents while supporting area farms and businesses. Grow, educate, provide. CapitalRoots.org. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibitions, events, and educational programs online and in person, open Thursdays through Sundays, skidmore.edu/Tang. And College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, for over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing. Full-service gas includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. Once again, thanks to Tony Yang of Gig Computers for being here today. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to Zach Malloy for joining us and Ed Rosen, our screener, for joining us. Thank you all, and God bless us, everyone. Tomorrow on the program, News 10 ABC meteorologist Jill Swed joins us. We'll talk about the autumnal equinox and whatnot or whatever. We'll see you, too.